Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hope you survived the snow. You're looking out your window with a nice cup of coffee and your sidewalk is shoveled. Your driveway is plowed and clear. The streets are good and you've survived the first Minnesota metro area snow. Of course, northern Minnesota got that snow last week and southern Minnesota got it this week. This is Sunday Take. I'm Blois Olson. This week's take includes Senator Amy Klobuchar on Instagram and the hearings of last week. MMB Commissioner Jim Showalter on the $7.7 billion budget surplus. And Public Records Media Matt Elling on trying to get info, emails, and where we stand on data requests from Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz. You know, it is the season of the holidays. And despite the $7.7 billion surplus, the polarization doesn't seem to have gone away. And in fact, that surplus is going to last a while, just as the debate is. The debate's going to go through next governor's race. Just brace yourselves. The other major issue that we continue to live with every day is crime. And, you know, it is not good. And Minneapolis has long been safer than most major metropolitan areas. But what seems to be missing is just some sort of plan, some sort of acknowledgement that we need to do something different. We've needed to do something different for a long time on prisons and jails. But right now with crime like this, it's going to be hard to fix things, especially during an election year. So I hope you get a fresh cup of coffee. You're ready for the show. It's Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO, and I'm your host, Blois Olson. We'll be right back.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to Sunday Take. One of the issues that probably doesn't get a lot of coverage, but within kind of the bubble of those in the media and those activists who cover politics is transparency. And one of the kind of ongoing issues on transparency is indeed access to emails of public officials. Minnesota has different rules depending on if you're in the legislature or you're in the executive branch. And it's become an issue because of, frankly, a lot of interest in the dialogue and nature of email during the COVID pandemic, especially the first few months with the governor's office and the administration. And so joining me now is Matt Elling of Public Record Media. Matt, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks a lot, boys.
Matt, let's just start with what is Public Record Media? Where are you located? How do you work? Because I think you, not a lot of people know about who you are, but you do some important work.
Yeah. Well, but thanks for the interest. We've been around for about a dozen years. So my background is in communications and television production. That's my day job. And then I have a volunteer side job, if you will. And that's Public Record Media. So I started this. It's a nonprofit organization. We're located in St. Paul, and it's basically all volunteer except for when we have to hire legal help or IT help. But it's all volunteer board of directors, a lot of former journalists, a couple attorneys, somebody who's on our board who we actually met helping her out doing data practices requests. She does a lot of them and wanted to join our board. So it's people that care about getting access to government records. And what we do is we make data requests to state and federal agencies and then publish the results. Mike Kazuba, who's our editor, who used to be with the Strib till he retired, he writes stories about that stuff. And then we occasionally go to court to litigate to get access to stuff that's being withheld by the government.
So I think that's one key point, is that it is a volunteer-driven organization. You don't, as I know it, and I'd love for you to verify, you don't receive funding from groups with agendas or, you know, from the right or from the left, or there's not a partisan or a political drive to the organization. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, we are explicitly nonpartisan, and we try to fill a void, which is basically trying to make sure that no matter who's in power, Democrat, Republican, we want to make sure that the public records laws are being applied to that administration or organization or government entity equally, so that people can have equal access to understand what their government's doing.
Matt Elling's my guest. We're talking about access to public records, specifically Public Record Media, based in St. Paul, a volunteer-driven organization, has been inquiring and filing data practices requests on the governor's office. Matt, bring us up to speed on kind of where, what the nature of the request has been and what you've run into over time with those kinds of requests from the governor's office.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, like I said, going back a dozen years now, we've done this with multiple administrations. This is the first larger data request we've made to the Walz administration. Made a couple smaller requests to the governor's office before. As folks are aware, there's been a lot that's happened sort of historically within the last couple of years, both the COVID pandemic and the rioting within the Twin Cities. So a lot of issues that have sparked public interest. So we were interested to kind of take a look at the decision making going on during those periods of time. So we made a request to the governor's office for three discrete blocks of time, 2-week periods each, around major events, the initial COVID lockdowns, the riots, et cetera, just to see what kind of decision making we could get our hands on to kind of enter into the public record, see what was happening behind the scenes. And we had received information that the governor's office uses a couple different email accounts. There's the tim.walz standard email account that's we've seen out there in the public record. And we also found out that there was a tim.mankato account the governor's office was using. So we asked for emails from both of those accounts. We didn't hear anything back for quite a few months, or at least not anything substantive. They acknowledged that they'd received the request. We asked them to confirm that they'd been saving data from both of those email accounts. Didn't hear anything back early November of this year. And so then we basically held a press conference because we know that other people within the press community have been kind of having issues with slow data production from that office. And yeah. We just kind of put it out there to the sort of general press community and the governor's office, saying, "Look, you know, let's have an update on what your policies are with regard to this request and also in general." And so then they told us they'd get back to us in 2 to 4 weeks, and we just got some data a couple days ago.
Got it. And I know you're probably looking through that data, but did you find it? I had asked the governor a couple of weeks ago when I interviewed him about the different email addresses. Have you gotten an answer on why there are two email addresses, or what the nature of how those different email addresses are used by the governor's office?
Yeah, we've put that question to their communications staff, and we're waiting for a full answer. They've given a couple responses out there in the press. I know they told the Minnesota Reformer that the tim.walz email is sort of their general email for intake, but they don't use it for internal correspondence. And they say that the tim.mankato email address is the one they use for internal correspondence. What's interesting about the data that we got recently, the 331 pages that the governor's office produced, is that the governor seems to be copied on things, but almost never responds to anything. There was just one email where he responded good to a press release that had been put together. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of communication from the governor, at least in the email production that we have.
And, you know, the governor, you know, kind of referenced that to me, and, you know, based on kind of reading his answer and understanding what he was trying to say, was that he intentionally doesn't respond to a lot of email, that he takes queries and then maybe picks up the phone, or he's on a Zoom during a pandemic. We've talked a lot about email. What about those? I mean, you know, pre-pandemic internal conversations obviously were tough to collect, but now that there's a potential that things were recorded, is there any part of state law that would make those available? And how does state law work on, you know, not just email, but all kind of correspondence? Is it just driven by email, or, you know, if somebody writes a memo, prints it and hands it to somebody, that might be a way that you don't necessarily know it happened. So how does the law apply to the executive branch?
Oh, sure. So our legislature was looking down the road pretty far back in the 1970s when they crafted our public records law. So our law is called the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, and they specifically made it apply to any data that existed that had been produced by a government entity. And all that stuff is presumed to be public unless there's a law that says this portion of it is not public for whatever reason. So certain security related data is not public, for instance. But it doesn't matter if that data is email or a piece of paper or a video conference file. It's all government data. Then there's a second law that's called the Records Retention Statute, and that governs how long you got to keep stuff for. So, yeah. You know, emails and video conferencing and, you know, memos on paper, they all have different retention schedules. So it really comes down to, is there a retention schedule that governs how long the thing has to be around?
And how long is that? And in, you know, does Public Record Media, your group, have an opinion on how long that it should be or shouldn't be? And do we have anything like the archives, like in the federal government, they have archives and people give things to the archives, which then makes it obviously available forever.
Right. Yeah. To the second part of your question, there is a state archives and that interfaces with that records retention law. So that records retention law basically says, you know, there's certain things that are on a recommended schedule for retention. So email in a lot of counties and cities, for instance, the recommended retention is 3 years. But then for certain official records, like an email that documents a particular decision that was made on this date that is official and affects people in a tangible way, that's an official record that for the most part has to be retained for a pretty long time. And a lot of those records then get transferred to the state archives at a certain point. Now, the state archives, you know, the tough thing about this records retention business is that unlike the Data Practices Act, where you've got a right to go get the information and you can sue if the government doesn't get it to you, it's harder to sue necessarily under the Official Records Act for a government agency throwing something out too early. There's a couple, I won't get into the weeds too much on that, but generally that's been harder. So that's kind of the conundrum people are in sometimes.
Matt Elling's my guest from Public Record Media. We're talking about this idea of the governor's emails, getting them. And, you know, we've, and we'll be sharing later this week, got a list of all the requests of the governor's office since he was inaugurated, who they were by and how long they've taken. And that'll be featured in Morning Take tomorrow on Monday. Matt, one of the things is the legislature has different rules. Does Public Record Media have a position on what the best standard should be on access to this, keeping things, and what should be open on in other branches of government?
Yeah, I mean, our general, and we're not a policy advocacy organization.
Right.
For full disclosure, I sit on the board of another separate organization called the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information that is more involved in data policy issues. But as far as Public Record Media goes, you know, we think there's a great value in having information about government decision making available to the public, having it around for a reasonable amount of time so that people can see what's happened. That's why, for instance, we went to state court to litigate over access to the state's bid that it put in for Amazon's second corporate headquarters, because we even though the state didn't get that, it was still important, we thought, for the taxpayers to see what they were potentially on the hook for that or for future deals. So that kind of access we think is important.
Makes sense. Matt Elling from Public Record Media. Do you anticipate that you'll get kind of the answers or the emails that you believe are out there? And do you have reason to believe that you haven't been provided emails that you know already exist?
Well, the issue that we're confronting now with the email production that we got from the governor's office is, you know, we put it in for two purposes. One was to see the historical record about what was happening and also to figure out how these two different email accounts were being used. And it's really difficult to do that if you can't see the email addresses in those
right.
emails that they've produced. But they gave us essentially a production of 331 pages with all of the email address information redacted. So you can't tell if it's the tim.mankato account that's being used or the tim.walls account that's being used. So we've asked them to revisit that because that information is public. The email address of a government official in Minnesota is public information. So that needs to be produced to us.
Sounds great. Tim Elling, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. When we come back, Senator Amy Klobuchar will join us for a conversation about hearings she held this last week on Instagram, what she expects to come from them, and more. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, this is Sunday Take.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. We've had the snow. It was a busy week. But one of the big stories that's going to shape a discussion politically, policy-wise, for months, if not the next 11 months, is news that Minnesota has a $7.7 billion budget surplus. And joining me now is MMB Commissioner Jim Showalter. Jim, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Blyce.
So you've been around a few of these surpluses, a few of these shortfalls. When the outside forecasters and the experts sit around and they give you the number, what was your immediate reaction? Or did you kind of have an idea it might be in that range based on collections and federal assistance?
Both are true. You know, I knew we were collecting a lot more than we had been previously. That, you know, the summer months, even some of the spring months, we yep. were seeing variations that were way bigger. So it would be hard not to have a big surplus.
Got it.
Still, expecting it and having it are two different things. So it is still kind of one of those moments you say, wow, that is reality. Here we go.
Some of us watch the whole presentation. Some of us dive into the documents. But for those people listening, what really contributed to this? What were the main factors that give us this surplus today?
Now, this forecast really has a number of different factors in it. And the key one is really that the economy and now, all Minnesotans are just starting to figure out how to deal with this pandemic environment, that the economy and our jobs, our businesses are figuring out how to keep things going. And while we've been doing that, we've still been going out and spending. You know, overall, a lot of people are still able to maintain their incomes. And large corporations across the country have still been able to make pretty good bottom lines. And those all lead very directly to the state's tax revenue. So starting around April, May of this year, we started seeing really big variations off of what we've been expecting for tax collections. And we anticipate that's not going to recede significantly. We're going to be a lot closer to where we were a year or two ago.
So those tax collections, all of it kind of comes together. It is a forecast, just like the weather on Friday was a forecast. And some people receive 10 inches of snow and some people receive 5 inches of snow. From your experience, when legislators ask, when the governor asks, where, you know, there's the political chatter, but where is the sensible, you know, I might make extra money next year, but I'm not going to spend it, you know, in the business before, you know, it's coming in. Where does your experience tell you that, you know, either the priorities should be, or the considerations for spending or cuts are most, you know, should be most thoughtful?
You know, there's a couple of different ways of thinking about it. And I think the easiest is we already have about $3.1 billion in the bank. That's money from the last fiscal year that we didn't expect to have. And so that's, you know, like the safest part of the forecast. So we still expect, you know, an additional $4 billion in this upcoming two-year period. But given that that $3 billion came in the last, say, 6 months or so, you can see that it's risky, but it's not as risky as you like guessing whether it's going to snow on Monday. It's closer. It's more relevant. So those are the money in the bank is probably the easiest way of knowing, yeah, we've got a good head start and we can certainly make some concrete plans right now. And we'll keep monitoring it. That's what Minnesotans do. We keep looking out the window to see if it's going to snow, but the weather's coming. And we keep doing that on the forecast as well.
My guest is Jim Scholwalter. He's the MMB Commissioner, Management and Budget. Minnesota had a $7.7 billion budget forecast, a surplus in that forecast. Jim, one of the things that I don't know, you know, we don't budget with inflation. We don't forecast with inflation. Inflation is at an all-time high. We learned on Friday, or not an all-time, but high in your lifetime and mine, let's just say as adults. What does that mean for this? Because, you know, I like to tell people, when your energy costs go up, the school district's energy costs go up. When your costs rise on fuel, then MnDOT's prices on fuel rise. How do you look at this inflationary place we're at and this forecast?
Yeah, you know, inflation is one of the concerns, one of those issues we highlighted, and we'll be looking at, because it's a risk. And it's going to have a real impact on what you really get for your budget. You know, for the next couple of years, Blaise,
yeah,
we don't include inflation. It's a current law forecast, and so appropriations have been set. So that inflation will take a bite out of what we can really do with those appropriations. So you know, that's the immediate issue. The longer term issue is, well, you know, if inflation continues, that means that revenues will go up and our numbers will look really healthy because our spending is pretty much, you know, doesn't get inflated. So, you know, we take those long-term projections with a grain of salt, knowing that, you know, more than $1 billion of our planning estimates is really just due to inflation not being in the forecast on spending.
Jim Scholwalter, thanks for joining me today on Sunday Take, and hopefully people understand this forecast a little more and they can get away from kind of the babble and the bluster of headlines and press releases, because that will dominate probably the next 4 or 11 months as we go. Thanks again.
Thanks, Blaise.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm Blaise Olson. For the final cup of coffee this morning, now that we've gotten real snow in Minnesota, none other than Senator Amy Klobuchar, who has made more buzz out of political snow than anyone else in the history of the world when she announced. So, Senator Klobuchar, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks, boys. Someone actually gave me, I have it in my office, I'm looking at it now, for Christmas, a picture of me doing that announcement in a perpetual snow globe.
That's so awesome.
You have that, which is very fitting for all the snow in Minnesota. But thanks for having me on.
No problem. So this past week, one topic that got a lot of attention that you've been very focused on for a while is tech companies, social media companies, but specifically this week, Instagram and Instagram CEO. Why don't you just let us know kind of what the purpose of the hearing was and what you took away from the hearing?
One of the outcomes of having no rules of the road in place on tech companies, really since we got the internet, is that it's having a lot of negative repercussions on certain people. And We know that from all of the polarization in our politics and how certain people just read some stuff, other people read some stuff. But what we really know it is with our kids. Many, many parents have talked to me about their kids getting hooked on just reading these platforms all the time. And in fact, the more and more stuff that's come out from the Facebook whistleblower and the documents we've seen now, we know that Facebook that owns Instagram, of course, their name is now Meta, owns Instagram. They changed their name in the middle of all this, which was rather amusing. They own Instagram. And what we know is that Instagram has greatly increased its budget and that we have executives actually saying on the record in documents that they viewed it as an existential threat if they started to lose teen users. So the marketing goal here on their part is diametrically opposed to parents' goals, because what they want is more kids on for a longer time, seeing more content so that they can see the ads. And the difference between this and TV, and there is a difference, is that, you know, parents can usually see what their kids are watching on TV. And there's rules about what kind of programs are on certain shows. This thing is the Wild West because kids are getting exposed to all kinds of bad content. One of my colleagues actually set up a account to see what would happen of a kid just looking for research on nutrition. And they end up getting things like, I have to be thin and eternally starved. This stuff keeps popping up as links. One mom told me she felt like she was next to a big sink that kept overflowing. The faucet wouldn't go off. And she tries to figure out how to shut down links on her kids or add more filters. And she's sitting out there with a mop just by herself trying to clean it all up. So my point with the CEO is, you run one of the most, the richest companies in the world, Meta, Facebook is, and this guy runs Instagram that's owned by them. And you tell me you don't have the technology to help these parents so that these kids don't see this stuff and that when they're too young, they're not even on your platform. Come on, they can do this. They don't want to.
Talking to Senator Amy Klobuchar, she was a key part of a hearing this past week on Instagram specifically. Senator, critics will say, you know, it's up to parents to do this. And you reference this parent, the mop. I'm a parent. I have two teenagers. You've met them before they were teenagers. But I will tell you that they spend plenty of time looking, viewing, TikToking, Instagramming. And, you know, you're always trying to have these conversations. One thing that I find interesting about this is the idea that they're not actually using any technology to make healthy ads. I mean, I'm never going to say you shouldn't be able to, you know, make money or have ads, but it's the healthy ads. Are there no restrictions on the types of ads that teens can be served on social media?
Well, they claim they keep trying to do it. And they also remember, it's not just ads. They also get linked up counts, which sometimes are paid things, right? Mm-hmm. And there really isn't much. It's on the social media companies to decide. And that's one of the problems. It's part of why you're seeing Democrats, Republicans, everyone saying, we need some rules. And I have introduced, I think, probably nearly 20 bipartisan bills in this area. What do we need to have happen? I think that one, really young kids shouldn't even be on these platforms, and you should be able to monitor that. And these companies certainly have the ability to have people register and figure out whether or not someone should be on the platform. Yep. So you need to upgrade some of our laws about what kids can see and not see. And there are some existing laws in place that haven't been changed for decades. Number two, we should have privacy, a federal privacy law. Most developed nations have those. People should be able to protect their data. You know how much Facebook makes off you boys? $51 a quarter, just when you don't know what's happening, because they know what your data is. So then they get paid to put ads up targeting you. Other countries, it's much less because they protect people's data. You should be able to protect your own data. The next thing would be these algorithms. One of the shocking things we found out, I guess maybe it's not shocking. So you put a post up on Facebook. Well, they changed them a few years ago. So if someone puts an angry emoji or one of their emojis in response to that, your post gets 5 times attraction as when someone puts a like, just a thumbs up.
Oh.
Yeah. How do you like that? So you wonder why the most partisan political speech, the most angry stuff gets more traction. Part of it is these algorithms that are not in our control. So we want more transparency on that, outside researchers to be able to look at the algorithm so we can figure out what we should do about that. Looking at, should they continue to be immune from any kind of legal action? This is something that's we've looked at, should there be exceptions for that? They're just completely immune, unlike other entities out there. And then the final thing is a lot of work I've done in competition policy. We'll never know if Instagram might have been able to develop bells and whistles to protect privacy and stop misinformation and make sure kids aren't seeing bad stuff. We won't know because Facebook bought them. And in the words of Mark Zuckerberg, these were his words, they discovered in an email, "I'd rather buy than compete." That is not American capitalism. We want to have competition. And what the big dominant platforms can do is buy up everyone in sight, and then you never develop the competition to maybe offer some bells and whistles to parents or to anyone that would be a better alternative. And so that's all of this is in the mix right now in Congress. And as I said the other day, I think we need a little less talk and a lot more action. That's a Toby Keith song.
I've heard that somewhere before. Last question on the social media. This would be across platforms, even for foreign owned platforms like TikTok. Yes. Is that true?
Good point. That's one of their points is, oh, this will, you know, somehow hurt. Of course, it would apply to TikTok. Okay. It would apply to any platform. One of the problems is if we just say, oh, we trust you and you do it yourself, well, then we don't have that. And I think that's why. And the other piece that we can talk about another day, but it's the fact that like Amazon and Google, we've really learned to rely on them, especially during the pandemic. They offer great services. We know that. But one thing that they should stop doing is that they keep putting their own products on top of other ones. So they control the platform and they do that. Yeah. So one of the things that Senator Grassley and I and Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin, I think Samantha Bee called it the Ocean's 11 of co-sponsors. It goes from Cory Booker to Josh Hawley on the bill. But what we're saying here is you shouldn't be able to put your own stuff at the top. And you shouldn't be able to copy the products. This is Wall Street Right. Journal reported this of other people. Get this. They copy the products and then they make them themselves. And then they put their product over the one they copied at the top of the search.
Yes.
So all of this is just getting it to me, preserving capitalism. And it's why we have it's such a bipartisan effort.
Got it. You talk about bipartisanship on this issue. Obviously, people read a lot of headlines. You and I talk privately. We talk about other bipartisan things. Obviously, there's a lot of negotiations going on and negotiations will continue. Fast forward to after the new year. Congress is there. There's a fresh look during even an election year. What are the bipartisan pieces that need to move after these big pieces of legislation
exactly.
get done?
Exactly. So I'd say the first thing is implementing these, and that does take oversight, right? It is that infrastructure funding that's so important, the broadband and the high-speed internet in Minnesota, the roads and bridges and rail, and all of that's going to start coming down the pike. So we want to make sure it gets out that the high-speed internet's actually getting built, especially in some of our rural areas. So that's a major thing. Okay. The second is what we need to work on more in my mind is some of these competition policies and getting this done. The third is supply chain. And there's been work done on this in terms of, and you know, a lot of this was the pandemic. It kind of blew up the way things were working. We all know that. But it is making sure that, yes, that our ports are working, that things are getting on trains, but also the workforce. And to me, there's a few answers for that. One is, you know, getting people, making sure they're going back to work. And that can mean everything from good wages, which is happening right now, by the way, to making sure that you've got childcare for people, something that we're working on right now. The bill we're debating is about that and helping people. I just still remember going to Marshall, and that was the number one request of the Chamber of Commerce was that we figure out how to get more childcare. So there's deserts in rural areas as well as problems in the metro. The third thing is apprenticeships and getting kids into jobs that are high paying, where we actually have openings, and working with our education system to make sure that happens. And the final is some immigration reform, especially in the tourism and ag areas. And we're seeing if we can do some of this here at the end of the year to get some more work permits. Yeah. And if we can do that, that would be great. But if it's something we have to continue working on into the coming year, it's a good time to work on it. So there's all of that in addition to, you know, everything from working with the rest of the world, potential looking at European trade agreements, some of these other things. And all of this is aimed at, after we've gotten through this pandemic, and we're not quite through it yet in Minnesota, but I think we see, as the Duluth mayor says, the lighthouse on the horizon. We need to look at how we can move forward with our economy. And there's a lot of things that have been, I would say, waiting action because of the fact that we've been struggling and dealing with the pandemic. Sounds, and that's good, for the rest of the world too, I'll say. The rest of the world, same thing.
Yeah, no, I know. I think that's what these latest variants have taught us, is that if the rest of the world doesn't take care of this too, or we don't help them do it, then it's not taken care of.
And on that front, so much of that's private sector now, which is great, but it is keeping developing those, although our U.S. government is taking a huge lead in, you know, distributing more vaccines than any other country in the combined in the world. Yeah. And so that has to keep going. But the science and the developing the medication, these new pills that are in the works now, that would make it so that COVID is not so lethal for so many people, so they don't die even if they get sick. Yep. And just continuing to get the vaccine out and get that medication out is really a lot of it, because we've learned we can't just bury our head in the sand in our country, that, you know, something's going to happen. I always think about this. I would get a call from a school group. This actually happened, whose kids, the parents or their kids were on some sports trip in Guatemala and there was a mudslide, or, you know, someone's trying to adopt a child from another country and they put in some draconian measures and they're stuck over there. Or, you know, the rest, we can't close ourselves out from the rest of the world. We saw what that was like when we were wanting to go back and forth with Canada, and we finally opened the borders now, but that people wouldn't think that created problems. It created a lot of problems, especially for northern Minnesota. So that's my point. We are integrated in the rest of the world, even though we want to make our stuff in America, and we do, and we are proud of that, and we need to do more of it. We still do business with the rest of the world. And so making sure that we bring COVID down, not just in America, but in other countries as well, and we work with them and find the least expensive ways to do that, from everything from getting the vaccines more mass produced to doing more on these medications that'll help if people get COVID, that's going to help our whole economy of our country.
Sounds great. My guest has been Senator Amy Klobuchar. You've been listening to the Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Talk to you next week.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.